The Final Whistle with Austin O'Callaghan. Ocean
This is the Final Whistle on Ocean FM. Leitrim are back at Croke Park for an All-Ireland football final this Sunday. We'll take you inside the Leitrim camp as they look to regain the Women's All-Ireland Intermediate title for the first time since 2007. On the men's front, the Connacht Gold Senior Football Championship begins tomorrow evening. And at the Olympics, Chris O'Donnell and the Ireland 4x400m mixed relay squad get ready for their semi-final on the opening day of the Athletics in Paris. That's tomorrow. Good evening. Welcome to the programme. This is Austin O'Callaghan. We're on 083 3500 530 by WhatsApp and text. Sport at oceanfm.ie is the email address, and you'll get us on Twitter as well at Ocean FM Sport. Speaking of the Olympics, and I know there is a tendency to jump on the arms in the air bandwagon every 4 years when a questionable boxing verdict comes through that you may see on your TV screen. It doesn't always concern an Irish fighter, but sometimes it does. And earlier this evening, Dana Morehouse making her Olympic debut for Ireland in the women's flyweight division. She's from Bray in County Wicklow. She appeared to have won her last 16 bout against her French opponent. Yet the verdict went the way of the French woman. Split decision. And I'm no boxing expert, but it looked a very peculiar result given the 3 rounds we had watched on the telly over the previous 9 minutes. And it does raise the question about the boxing criteria, and I don't know what they're going to do, whether they put electronic markers on the head and the chest to signify scoring punches to try and make the scoring clearer. But it isn't really a surprise that the future of boxing in the Olympics is in doubt, and it is on the listed, one of the listed sports to be removed from the next Olympic Games in Los Angeles. No decision made on that yet, but fights like that don't strengthen its case, you have to say. And that's not with green tinted sunglasses commenting on that, but take a look back at it yourself if you can find the fight online and make your own mind up. Anyway, we'll move on. It is All-Ireland final weekend for the Leitrim football team. They play Tyrone in next Sunday's TG Cahir All-Ireland Intermediate Final at Croke Park. 1:45 throw-in. We will bring you the game live here in full on Ocean FM. Let's hear from some of the girls who'll be lining out for Leitrim this Sunday. Among them, team captain Michelle Guckian, dual star Mirren Devaney, Glenn Carmanners, Leah Fox, Laura O'Dowd and Charlene Tyrrell, who's a connection with the last Leitrim team to win the All-Ireland Intermediate title back in 2007. But first, let's hear from Glenn Carmanners' Alva Clancy, who remembers that Leitrim success all those years ago in the early noughties.
I was there in 2007 when the ladies won, and to grow up playing with some of those women and to be going back to Croke Park again now is really special, and just really looking forward to it.
Yes, indeed. And Eve Trainer, who was a sub-goalkeeper, I don't know whether you're still in that capacity, you probably still are. You never know, you might see action in Croke Park. You'll be looking forward to that.
Yeah, definitely. It's just an unbelievable experience to be with the panel at the minute, and to get to Croke Park is unbelievable to think.
Yeah, and it was a great year to be with the panel. I think Leitrim are going for a 7th win in a row.
Yeah, definitely. It's exciting, and it was definitely a good year to join as well.
Yes, indeed. And Alva, has been a great campaign for Leitrim in the All-Ireland Intermediate Championship. Having won the Connacht Championship, it certainly has been a step very far forward.
Yeah, it's been massive. I think we were all very, very disappointed with how the league ended, but I think that was a really important point in the season for us. You know, we could have, you know, put the heads down and walked away, or, you know, not pushed on, but I think everyone pushed on, so the intensity in training just went up. You know, the team is so committed. You know, we always say we might have a small team, but the bond of the team and all the girls get on just so, so well, and we all have each other's backs, and it's been a great championship campaign.
And Martin, you got some key scores and made some major contributions to getting Leitrim to Croke Park.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose I only finish them as the girls up the field that do the hard work, and you know, I get some good balls in, and I suppose that's my job, to finish them. The backs do their job, and you know, it's really enjoyable up there.
And Leah, you did have probably interrupted. You came on as a substitute, but you did make big contributions at times also to getting to Croke Park.
Yeah, I suppose the last two games I've came back from injury, but it's great to be able to play either 30 seconds or 60 minutes, like anytime you get on the field and try help the team. That's all you can do. So, just whenever I come on, try my best, and that's it.
And Tyrone are the opposition, and Tyrone are a very good side.
Yeah, no, there. We had them in Ballinamore there a few weeks ago. A really tight game, the one that the girls came back and won by a point in the end. But look, we're going to Croke Park under no illusions. I think we're going to be underdogs. They're going to play in Division 1 football next year. But we're going to give it everything we have, and we'll see what happens.
Yes, and Tyrone are a very good team, Warren. You played against them in Ballinamore. You'll be meeting them in Croke Park. Certainly, it's on a bigger stage.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure, any day you're playing in Croke Park, it's a bigger game and a bigger challenge. But, you know, it's one we'll relish, and we really can't wait. You know, whoever the opposition is, everyone wants to play the best team, and you know, we're there on merit too. So I really can't wait for the challenge, and whatever they pose, hopefully we'll be able to overcome it.
How do you see the Tyrone challenge, Alba?
Yeah, it's going to be a very tough game, as expected, as it was in Ballinamore as well. I think, as Leah said, you know, they're going in as favourites. We're the underdogs, but you know, we're going to give it our all, and we're not just there to make up the numbers. We're there to go and win.
I have with me Laura O'Dowd, who played for Ballinamore Sean O'Heslin's in the All-Ireland Intermediate Final in Croke Park last year. And I have Charlene Turtle, who played for Leitrim in 2007, the last time that Leitrim won the Mary Quinn Cup. So both Laura and Charlene, no doubt, are looking forward to being back in Croke Park. Your Croke Park experience will be good for the All-Ireland Final against Tyrone.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was in Croke Park only about 6-7 months ago, so it's fresh enough. You know, it was a really, really good experience. The build up to it feels quite similar now, so I feel I have a bit of experience there. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
It'll not be a new experience where you're stepping out onto Croke Park, Laura.
No, it definitely won't be, but it'll still be, you know, really exciting, and we still have the whole build-up of it now, so it's just important that we stay as focused as we can. Obviously, enjoy the build-up as much as we can, because it doesn't come around too often, but at the same time, still be focused. We have a big job ahead of us.
Yes, indeed, and Charlene, you had to wait 17 years to get back to Croke Park, but you have had a big experience in Croke Park.
Yeah, if someone had told me in 2007 it'd be 17 years till Leitrim were in another All-Ireland and I'd be in it, I would have laughed at them. But no, it's wonderful. My experiences now aren't as fresh in my head, but I was just saying to Maren there, because I was 21 when I would have played, and she was asking my experiences, and I said to her, just enjoy every moment from the build-up to the day itself. It's not just about, you know, Sunday, 2 weeks. It's about the whole build-up and being together here and, you know, seeing out to the last training session like we set out at the beginning of the year, when every team says our aim is to get to Croke Park. The belief sort of only hit me when we won the Connacht final against Roscommon. I could feel some magic building within us, and I had a feeling like this was going to go to the very end, and it's wonderful to be going back to Croke Park with these girls. I love them, you know, and I want them to experience it and hopefully experience what it's going to be like lifting the Mary Quinn Cup.
That's it, and obviously Tyrone are the only problem about lifting the Mary Quinn Cup at this stage. You've played Tyrone already, so you will not fear Tyrone.
No, and we didn't fear them when we went out to play them in the first game. I'm always a firm believer there's not much difference in the intermediate teams. They're a Division 1 team, we're a Division 4, so I've no doubt we'll go in as underdogs, but all we do is focus on ourselves. You know, we don't put emphasis on the other team, and ourselves and our strengths and our performance, and the result will take care of itself. But we have just learned so much from the loss against Limerick. I think we just know how it is to lose so, so badly. Like, it was like grieving to death after we got beat by Limerick. I'm not joking. So to build ourselves back up from that and get this far, I think it's a phenomenal achievement. And I have no doubt Tyrone are going to come for blood, but we'll be ready for them.
And Tyrone will probably come for blood, all right, but they did come for blood in Ballinamore, but they didn't get it.
No, no. And I think everybody was probably as shocked as they probably were that day. I think we surprised everyone. But we knew we could do it. We knew from the very start we're just as good as any team in that intermediate group. So, yeah, we pulled it out of the bag. We had a slow start. You know, it took us a while to get going. But once we settled into that game, we just kept going. And we went right to that final whistle and we got that win. And that's what we're looking for again now in 2 weeks.
And since the defeat by Limerick, the Leitrim ladies team has improved, I suppose, by leaps and bounds.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Charlene said, like, we were absolutely devastated. You know, it was such an awful feeling. But we had a good chunk of time there before we had to play Roscommon in the Connacht final. So we knew we had that time to rebuild ourselves, to work on the things that went wrong for us on the day. And that's what we've been doing. We've been working on the things that we've needed to. And every game, we've taken it one step at a time and we've been getting stronger and stronger each time. And I think that's a big help as to why we're in an All-Ireland final.
So that's going to be a huge day. You're looking forward to it, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. Cannot wait. Cannot wait. I think everybody in Leitrim are behind us now. They're absolutely buzzing. And yeah, we can absolutely not wait.
And you're looking forward to it too, Charlene.
No, can't wait. I was at the launch of the championship there earlier in the year and got a picture with Noah on the pitch. And I says, you and me are going to lift this cup in August. And we're nearly there. Can't wait, yeah.
Michelle Guckian, as Leitrim team captain, I suppose it's your dream to be in Croke Park.
Oh, absolutely. It's a dream come true to play in Croke Park. The excitement from everyone, not even us, just the, not even the squad, just even the supporters. You're meeting people on the street, you're meeting people in the shops, and they're just so excited for us. So it means just as much to the supporters that we've had all year as it does to us. And we're looking forward to the challenge.
And every player on the team, I'm sure this is a dream come true.
Oh, 100%. It's a dream come true for a lot of people, like past players that I've played with down the years from since, geez, I won't even say how long, but they haven't seen Croke Park and they have been some brilliant talents. So we have a few players in our team from the two Ballinamore girls playing in Croke Park there in December. And so Laura and Molly. And then we have Charlene Turrell there that played in the All-Ireland 2007. But knowing from past players that didn't get the chance to play in Croke Park, we want to do it for them as well, just as much. And we're really looking forward to the challenge ahead.
That's it. And it's good to have that experience. And I think everybody else will benefit from the other girls' Croke Park experience. It has been a great campaign for Leitrim. After disappointment of defeat by Limerick in the Division 4 of the league. But since that, it has been all fantastic performances by the Leitrim team.
Yeah, I suppose we've had our fair share of defeats from this year, Limerick in the league, and then from last few years with the league final against Antrim and the league final against Loud in the COVID times. So we've had our fair share of defeats. And I think this year, just the belief was in us that we could go all the way if we just stuck our heads down and kept going at it. We're really excited for it. So, but it's the belief that the management have instilled in us as well, and the belief in the players that are around us. Them defeats are hard to take, but we were straight back to training the Wednesday after the Limerick game, and we made a pact that we were going to knuckle down and we were going to do it. And we got to the All-Ireland final, so we've one more step on an amazing journey so far.
Yeah, that was a great pact, obviously. It has succeeded all the way since. What you want now is for it to succeed on August 4th in Croke Park.
Absolutely. Again, it'll be a brilliant test for us up in Croke Park. There's some very, very talented girls on this team that just can showcase their skills up in Croke Park and the biggest pitch there is. So to see Leitrim line out in Croke Park will be a great day.
Yes, indeed. And you certainly have had a tough road to Croke Park because many different challenges had to be overcome to get to Croke Park.
Oh, yes. So the whole championship has been a challenge, from the Connacht Championship against Roscommon and Sligo. There was serious contention, like Roscommon are a brilliant team, which we overcame overcome them twice, but on narrow margins, and them games could have gone either way. The same with Tyrone, the same with Wexford. So we know that there's tough challenges. Same at Wicklow, we know that there's tough challenges around each corner, and it's just on the day we have to be set, we have to be focused, and we have to be ready to go. Which from training the last couple of days, the focus is there, the concentration is there, and we're where we want to be.
Can you visualise yourself lifting the Mary Quinn Cup on August 4th?
I haven't thought that far ahead now, to be honest. I like to kind of take it in baby steps. So just to get out on the pitch and play them 60, 70 minutes, I'm not even thinking that far ahead. What's the task in hand is where we're going to. So the task in hand is them 60, 70 minutes on the pitch, and we'll take it after that.
That's it. And hopefully that vision of the Mary Quinn Cup coming back to Leitrim is in every one of the players' minds, in every one of the management minds and the county board minds.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, we'd love to see the Mary Quinn Cup back in Leitrim. Again, it will be a tough ask, but it's one that we're willing to get up for the challenge and push on for.
Cathy Butler, Leitrim Ladies County Board Chairperson. It's a huge occasion, Leitrim and Croke Park on August 4th with Tyrone as their All-Ireland opponents.
Oh, absolutely, PJ. It's uncharted territory. I think we can't nearly, you know, it's just really exciting to be here, and it's a learning curve for all of us, like trying to figure out the logistics of it. It's definitely new for me, and obviously it's what we were hoping for and aiming for from the start of the season. And it's why we do all of this is to be here. And you know why the girls are training on dirty nights in Clune in the wet weather in November. That's the, you know, this is the payoff for it. And you know, the girls have worked so hard. The team and management are really, you know, they've left no stone unturned. So it's you know, just reward for all of their efforts.
Yes, indeed. And it has been a great season for Leitrim after the league defeat by Limerick. Leitrim have come back by leaps and bounds and deserve to be in Croke Park on August 4th.
Absolutely. You know, and I think we had a great league campaign. In terms of the group stages, like the only defeat was against Fermanagh, who we lost out by a goal to, you know, so we knew we had a good campaign. The girls, you know, knew that all of that effort had been put in and that the talent was there. And then I guess, the result against Limerick was not as hoped. And as it turned out, Fermanagh were in the same boat. And, you know, so the league didn't end as we had intended it to end. And I suppose that probably has spurred on the group quite significantly to the performance that we saw in Kiltoom in the Connacht final, and they've just maintained that level of performance and that effort, and you know, they're just going from strength to strength as far as I can see right now.
That's right, and they have to go to one more strength and beat Tyrone in the All-Ireland final.
Absolutely, and you know, that's the ultimate goal, and obviously as any team you're going to need to be at the very top of your game to get across the line on All-Ireland final day. And you know, I suppose it's firstly, we need to enjoy the occasion, enjoy the build-up to it, enjoy the actual occasion, enjoy the match. And, you know, I suppose the key piece is that everybody does their best and, you know, you walk off the field with no regrets, and whatever happens after that is you know, in the lap of the gods. But we're confident that we, you know, the girls are so, you know, they're so focused. They're such an exceptional group. We're extremely proud of them as a county board, and you know, the management, as I said, are doing everything they can. And, you know, we know it's going to be a huge challenge. We were against the odds. We beat Tyrone in the first round of the group stages in Ballinamore back in June. And, you know, it's you know, we had to do the same against Roscommon. We beat them in Kiltoom. We had to beat them again. And that's the challenge that exists. And that's, you know, it's what's in front of us, and we have to embrace it. And I guess it's an exciting challenge. It's exactly what we want.
Cathy Butler, Chairperson of Leitrim LGFA, speaking to PJ Leddy there. And before that, you heard from a number of the Leitrim players: Alva Clancy, Miran Devaney, Laura O'Dowd, Leah Fox, Charlene Tyrrell, Michelle Guckian, and Eve Traynor, the reserve goalkeeper. Sunday's final throws in at 1:45 at Croke Park. Leitrim against Tyrone in the TG Cahir Women's All-Ireland Intermediate Quarter Final. And it's live here on Ocean FM. Compliments of Sean McTernan, Carpets and Bedding, Ballas Quay in Sligo. The game is also live on telly on TG Cahir. It's preceded by the junior final for Fermanagh against Louth. and followed by the senior decider, that's Kerry against Galway at 4:15 this Sunday afternoon. Next to Donegal, she started out as a GAA mum, a Bord na Nóg secretary, then club chairperson. Now, Éirigh Ballyshannon's Lisa McTernan has landed the top GAA administration role in the county. On Tuesday next, she will succeed the outgoing Noreen Doherty in the main admin role in Donegal Gaelic Games. Lisa is currently chairperson of Éirigh in Ballyshannon, and she's been talking to Ocean FM Sport about her elevation through the administration ranks in the GAA.
My GAA involvement started when my own son was underage and I was approached to just come to a Bord na Nóg meeting. I wouldn't have to do anything, just to come to the meeting. But I walked out of that meeting being Bord na Nóg secretary, and that was 10 years ago. I stayed involved at Bord na Nóg for another 8 years, seven as secretary, and I finished up the last year, the eighth year, as chairperson. The second year involved, I was approached by the then secretary, Emma Gaughan, to ask would I be club secretary. I didn't know if I had the capability to do both roles, but I said yes anyway. And there I stayed then again for eight years as club secretary, up until last year, and current chairperson. I took that on this year.
So you began as a GAA mum and Éirigh managed to lasso you in, and today you're club chairperson.
That is exactly correct. A GAA mum going to football and hurling with my underage son, and approached by two different people to ask me to attend the meeting, and here I am.
Did you play at any stage?
No, school with Teddy Kane, and that was it.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't the playing bug that brought you here?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't that reason. Obviously, I would have been had an interest over the years. My dad would have been involved at different levels. I remember going to games with him when I was younger, things like that. So the interest was always there. And then obviously when Evan got, so my son, got involved, it brought me back further into the club.
And from day one, did the administration side of things appeal to you?
Yes, I think it did. I had no idea what I was getting into, and maybe that was a good thing. And I took it on. I had great help from the beginning in each of the roles I've done, and very supportive people there. So I was never on my own doing any of the roles. But yes, it's not something that I have regretted ever taking on.
Right. And then when did the Donegal GAA County Administrator role move onto the horizon for you?
Maybe a couple of months ago. It was mentioned to me by somebody that it possibly was coming up, and I like that. I put it to the back of my head. I was like, I'm in a job I love. I'm doing plenty at the minute. And then the application came out, and it was a detailed application, and I thought, you know what, I'll fill it in and I'll sit it in the draft, and if I send it, I send it, and if I don't, I don't. And I did hesitate, more out of maybe, God, I don't know if I'm able to do this or do I want to do it. And then just on the day before the deadline day, I sent in the email.
And then you got called for the interview. What was that process like?
So I didn't hear anything for a few weeks, and I, again, just put it in the back of my head, thought if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, as I said, I'm in a job I love. We're working with people I love. Current chairperson, that's sufficient. But I got the call for the interview, and yeah, freaked out a wee bit. And so told, only three people knew I was going. I didn't tell anybody else that I was doing it at all. So I went down to the interview process, and I actually found the interview process really, really relaxing, if that's the right word to use. The people who interviewed me were so nice. The questions were about what I know, as in from an admin level and also from a GAA level. So I did walk out of the interview going, yeah, that went okay, I think. Okay. But still a wee bit hesitant that it could happen.
It is about backing yourself as well, which clearly you do.
Yeah, it's about having the confidence that I know what I'm doing. And a lot of people think they know the GAA until they're involved in the background of it, and are surprised that there's so much involved, with just the simple task of getting a team out onto the pitch every week to play a game, that there's a lot more involved than just turning up and being on the pitch. So yeah, I would, but that comes with being involved for so long. It didn't come day one. It's 10 years experience at my club that is, and 10 years experience dealing with people in the county board. I was on the Southern Board for 2 years as secretary there. So I was a minor CCC delegate, senior CCC delegate. So I've dealt with a lot of people over the years. And I think without that, I wouldn't have applied at all.
Well, clearly, 8 years as club secretary, your club chairperson in Éireann Ballyshannon at the moment, that speaks for itself in terms of your own administrative capability. Anecdotally, we would hear, you know, Lisa McTiernan, mighty organiser, it'll be done if she has her hands on the tiller. You know, we're in business here, which is a nice backhanded compliment to hear.
It is definitely nice to hear. Some people might call me a control freak, which I am as well. I'm not going to deny that. But I do think, because when I came into this, as I said, from the second year on, I was Board and Oak secretary and club secretary. So I had to have the ability to be able to organise and get everything and work at the same time and have two kids. So it was a lot. I'm a very organised person. Yeah.
While you've been immersed in the GAA for some years here in Ballyshannon, this is now a career change for you. You're taking up a full-time Ulster Council administrative role, which means a change of day job for you. So it is a life change for you.
Absolutely. And I think that was one of the things I was hesitant about, because it is a total change. I work in my hometown, literally out the road. So to go to that, to have to change working with people, dynamics, it's definitely going to be daunting, but I am looking forward to the challenges that it's going to bring.
You're about to succeed Noreen Doherty, another woman who's been part of the Donegal GAA furniture for 4 decades. How much have you been able to learn or glean about the role?
In my role as club secretary, I obviously would have had a lot of dealings with directly with Noreen, and she's obviously been there for many years, and I've also always found her really easy to deal with. If you need a question answered, regardless of what the question is or who it might be meant for, Noreen will always have the answer. So I am very aware that it's massive shoes to fill in replacing Noreen, but again, yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah. And you start in early August?
I do. I have one this week and now next week in my current job, and then after the bank holiday, it's straight in.
Are you someone who sets out a list of ambitions when you go into a new job like this? Have you things in mind you want to do, achieve?
I'm not sure I'd call it a list of ambitions. What I do hope I'm able to bring to the role is the experience I've had at club level. And what I've done for my club over the last 10 years, that I'm hoping that I have the ability to bring that to the new role for all the other clubs in Donegal as well.
Sure. Are you excited about it?
Nervously excited. Definitely so, yeah.
And I suppose you've got to be a more even-handed tiller now as a county board representative. So when Éireann Ballyshannon are phoning you asking about this or about that, it's a different role for you now, is it?
My phone might have to go off for a while.
But for now, you'll remain as club chairperson here in Ballyshannon.
Definitely so, until the end of the year at least, and then obviously decisions will have to be made, but it's a role I thoroughly enjoy doing.
A couple of things strike me listening to you, Lisa. This is the 50th anniversary, of course, of the LGFA, and there's been a lot of reflection and celebration about the contribution that women have made to Gaelic games in this country. Maybe it's a very apt time to be taking on a role like this?
Probably so. Even with our own club over the last couple of years, the ladies underage and senior has developed massively. Our under-12s are actually going to Croke Park to play at half-time in the All-Ireland. And our Division 1 senior ladies are in a final this Sunday. So I can even see it within our own club, how much it has developed over the last number of years.
And what an exciting time to be involved with Donegal GAA at county level, given the rejuvenation of the men's team. Women's football has already been prominent. I know that's a different organisation, but you'd have an interest in that as well. It's a very exciting time, a period of possibilities for Donegal Gaelic Games right now.
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely, this year has been a massive positive year. Obviously that has got to do with Jim coming back and where the Donegal team have reached this year. So it brings a whole lot of different interest, maybe from people who haven't been interested before. So it's always good to have the positive outlook.
And while you'll have your county hat on most of the time, you'll still be allowed to cheer for Éireann now and again, won't you?
Oh, I'll still probably always wear my Éireann hat.
There'll still be green and white on the car flag. I imagine that is Lisa McTernan, the new Donegal GAA County Administrator and current Éireann Club Chairperson. She starts her new role in succession to Noreen Doherty next Tuesday. When we come back after the break, we'll hear from the Sligo woman who's helping teenagers in Australia develop their life skills using boxing.
The Final Whistle with Austin O'Callaghan.
Now, we referenced a boxing verdict at the Olympics earlier this evening, which Irish boxer Dana Morehouse was on the wrong end of this evening. Here's a more positive boxing story, which comes from down under. Sligo's Mercedes Taff, we know, developed a big reputation here as a champion kickboxer back in the day, as well as being a noted coach to several elite boxers. Now she lives in Australia, where she works as a psychologist, and Mercedes has developed the Counterpunch program, which combines the sport of boxing with psychology to help teenagers in Australia develop their own life skills. Merck, as she's better known as in Oz and at home, is planning to expand the Counterpunch program overseas, including in Ireland. And she's been speaking to Ocean FM Sport about her plan this week.
Counterpunch is basically an education program for adolescents to help them navigate the normal sort of trials and tribulations of being a teenager. It's not a program for high-end kids that have had a clinical diagnosis or have had some major issues as such. It's more to target that kid in the middle, if you like, the ones that kind of tend to fall through the gap. The kids whose parents might be a little bit concerned that, you know, maybe around their friendship circle or their performance at school is not like as good as it could be, or maybe they're not as maybe a little bit anxious and that sort of thing, but they're not in any way thinking in terms of they need to see a psychologist. But it's an education program so that they won't need to see a psychologist going forward, if you like. So it's a three-phase program. It's delivered over 24 weeks, 6 months, once a week during term time. It's a group program. It's hosted in a gym, so it's very much using a physical medium of movement with some discussions. And ultimately, we have mentors, peer mentors as well, because they're the peers are the ones that have the most influence at that stage of development. It's educates around things like, you know, setting effective goals, understanding how to increase the gap when they're triggered, to use a Glasser analogy, to be able to drive their own car rather than being a passenger in their own car. We touch on nutrition, on sleep, on social storytelling, on relationships, a little bit of challenge, a little bit of fun, a little bit of competition. It's a very comprehensive program, really. I've only touched the surface of what's involved, but that's the structure. It's three phases delivered over 6 months, and it's layered in terms of you can do different levels of the program. So there's a pathway once you graduate the program to become a mentor as well. And ultimately, we've just qualified our first two junior facilitators. One is 20 and the other one is 16, would you believe? So they've been with me for the last 5 years.
Okay, I'll ask the uneducated question straight up, Merck. For mums and dads listening, they might ask themselves, how wise is it to be teaching frustrated kids or angry kids boxing?
Okay, well, first of all, what I would say is that it's no contact in the actual program itself. It's just the physical movements. Boxing's very all round in a sense that it targets all five components of physical fitness. We also utilize the movements in boxing for coupling skills and coordination and all that sort of thing. But the other thing I would say very strongly is that the misconception amongst some people about amateur boxing being a violent sport is so off the mark. basically those that box don't, like, they literally aren't violent. I mean, surely even if you just look at our own local in Dean Clancy and listen to his interview after probably the biggest disappointment of his life and how mature and how, you know, thoughtful he was about his teammates and everything else and how he handled that as a young man who's literally still an adolescent in that he's only 22 years of age. And he's just like an absolute example of how the sport of boxing, what sort of athletes and what sort of young men boxing produces.
You're a qualified psychologist in Australia, Merck, and kickboxing, you know, the combat sports have been part of your life growing up. Is this something that developed, this interest in helping young people, is this something that developed organically for you?
Pretty much. I mean, I could say, tell you a little bit of a story of kind of how it evolved, but literally I did my psychology degree in Ireland and then I did my sports science degree at the University of Limerick. And then while there, I won a scholarship to do a PhD. And as part of that, I needed an empirical questionnaire to do the research. And that's how I ended up coming across the reality therapy and choice theory. And that was like a really massive changing point for me. I learned so much just in that 5 days that it completely changed my outlook. As a result, I literally gave up my scholarship, which was a 60,000 euro scholarship. I sold the house I grew up in Ireland. I mean, I was in my 40s at the time. And I set in progress the move over here to Australia. But if I was to say why I set it up, I would say my driving force is basically that I wished I knew what I know now when I was a teenager, and I think it would have made such a difference in how I would have tackled all of the challenges that I had as a teenager. And I think the medium of just doing martial arts and doing boxing, I mean, it's such a good analogy for life when you think about it. You know, the ring is your world and your opponent is all the obstacles you face in your world. And in terms of getting out of your comfort zone and challenging yourself, I don't think there's anything that can compare to jumping into a ring or onto a mat in an individual sport that sort of sets you up for that getting out of your comfort zone and challenging yourself in life and getting to the next level always. My mistake was that I kept moving to the next level and didn't stop to enjoy the one I was at. So, you know, there's so much that I've learned over the years, and the combination that I ended up doing of psychology, sports and exercise science, reality therapy and choice theory, you know, all of those things put together with the life experience is literally what makes up what is now the Counterpunch program.
And if people want to read more about the Counterpunch program, you can visit the website counterpunch.com.au. It's gained real traction over the years in Australia, Merck, and now you want to introduce an international dimension to Counterpunch. You want to take it overseas, including Ireland?
Well, absolutely. I mean, for me, this program is not rocket science. You don't need to be a psychologist to deliver the program. I mean, the reason that I went and got all those pieces of paper was back in the day when I was working with the Sligo Leader Partnership and I was coaching boxing in the early days. We used to go to the council or somewhere like that for a grant. And, you know, the question you always got was, well, have you got a piece of paper or a qualification that you can base your application on? And I'm like, surely being a qualified coach or a, you know, martial arts coach for so many years should mean something. But literally, you know, the social kind of environment as it is, you needed a piece of paper. So literally getting those qualifications was the reason I did it, was so I could go back and do what I was doing anyway. And what I want to do is with Counterpunch, what I've created is something where, you know, other coaches that were like me back then can deliver this program just by doing the training in becoming certified in Counterpunch and still be under the auspices of a psychologically developed empirical program. And then obviously, coaches, for me, have so much to offer in terms of they already have a massive connection with young people. They have the respect of those young people. They know how to make them tick in some ways. And all I'm literally doing with Counterpunch is adding a few tools that will accelerate the process, if you like. I mean, again, I'll keep referring back to Dino, but if you look at Dean and his journey over the years and where he's at now, I'm sure there's a lot of the tools that he's got over the years that would be in Counterpunch that would hopefully be things you could teach in a much shorter time space of like 6 months, 12 months, so that kids that, even if they never box, learn those tools and those skills. So basically what I want to do is, again, I keep saying it's not rocket science, it's just information, is just to be able to provide that service that we've been doing here for the last 10 years. And the outcomes are so positive. You just have to look at the website and check out a few of the testimonials. Like, I know it works. I just want to replicate that. I want that to be available to kids all over the world, basically. And it's not a huge deal to set it up. And God knows there is a demand. Like, my initial funding in Darwin actually came from suicide prevention. And at the time, per capita, Northern Territory and Ireland were the highest per capita suicide in the world. And, you know, as part of my research, we realized, because I worked with the child and adolescent mental health care team, so I was very much on the clinical or the other end of it, which was another reason why I wanted to get back into the behavioral early side of it rather than when the horses bolted, as it were. But the stats showed us that literally less than 3% were in the health system of those that suicide, unfortunately. So you can't predict suicide. You have to educate. You have to educate and teach the tools to help kids to problem solve and be resilient and deal with, you know, what life throws at us. But sometimes those kids aren't getting those tools. And again, it's just information. And that's my passion, is to get that information to them. The stat that 75% of all clinical diagnosis occurs between the ages of 12 and 25 is enough to motivate me, because if we can just impact that stat in any way, it's going to make a massive difference, you know. I'm not saying all clinical diagnoses are just need information, but I can assure you that having worked in private practice for quite a while, the majority of them are, you know, just intervention or information at the right time before it sort of festers long enough to become something that is diagnosable.
Just before we talk in more detail about how the Irish dimension of Counterpunch is going to work, could you perhaps, assuming it's not betraying any confidences, share a story, an example of a young person you've worked with in Australia who joined the Counterpunch programme and how his or her life was transformed by what they learned and developed with Counterpunch?
Sure. My only challenge is to decide which one to talk about, because there's so many. But I'll take Max as an example. Max was a young man. He came to me when he was just 11 years old. Very shy, very reticent, totally lacking in confidence, but obviously a lovely kid. He started to do the program, and even after the first level where he graduated, like, his mom's testimony is actually on the website. But one of the things she said was that Counterpunch simply teaches things that she, as his mom, couldn't teach him. And his confidence, she said, was just so good. And he actually was approaching her to have a conversation, which before, boys in particular tend to just reside in the room and not talk to mom sometimes or dad. Since then, Max is, come the whole way through the Counterpunch program, the level 2 shadow mentor, now to senior mentor. And just most recently, he participated in a 3-day workshop training with, 4 adults and himself, and Jalen is another one of our young, facilitators. And like, the comments from the people in the room were just, they were just like, this guy, there's no way this kid's only 15. Like, he's not quite 16 yet. His maturity and his wisdom, you know, it was just incredible, they said. And he was somebody who, he went into the club, because we provide the club as a safe space. You don't have to join a club after it, but it's just a safe place for the kids to continue to have a goal. And Max wasn't doing any sport, so he decided boxing was for him. He lost his first 7 bouts, but it didn't throw him in the least. He just learned from everyone and kept going. And then just 2 weeks after our, before our facilitator graduation, he actually went to nationals and won a national junior title. And he had to go up a weight. Like, he had to actually go up to the next weight division. And, you know, for a lad that had 7 losses in his first 7 fights, to go up to nationals, go up a weight division, fight a lad 10 kilos, an open lad 10 kilos heavier, and just go in and perform. And he won it 5 on every card, all 3 rounds. And the thing, the difference was so obvious, because I was the actual state coach for the juniors. The difference wasn't that he was a better boxer. It was just the way he approached it. His mental fitness and his levels of anxiety were, he had tools to be able to deal with that. I mean, that's just one story. And like, he's just going from strength to strength. Another young man, his mom said, literally, that if he hadn't found Counterpunch, he'd either be in prison or dead. That sounds very strong, but that's what she believed. Another young man, his mom was saying that, you know, he actually talks to them now. He doesn't hide in his room. As a family, they're communicating so much better because he's learned the skills that he's learned through Counterpunch. And his older brother, his older sibling, also graduated Counterpunch. I have another young man who's diagnosed as autistic. He came to me when he was 11, and since then he's now 16. In the last year, he hasn't even been on the, it's called, there's a service here called NDIS, or National Disability, it's like funding. He hasn't been utilising that for the last 12 months. He's come off it completely because his mum's like, he's getting everything he needs. So in the club, he's learned all the skills, and this young man's just incredible how much he's matured. We did interviews after a tournament that we hosted here. We do an annual show up here in the hills. And last year he did an exhibition because we wanted to match him, make sure he didn't get hurt. You know what I mean? And he come out of the race, I want to fight next year. So I said to him, right, I'm going to treat you just the same as all the other lads. You got to do the work and I might yell at you occasionally and all this kind of stuff. And he's like, okay, okay. And he did it. He did all the work, did everything he was asked. He was on weight. He just did everything. And he got pipped in the fight, but that was what was impressive because he didn't come out of it all depressed and upset and mad that he lost. He was just so mature about it. He was like, oh, yeah, I did my best and I improved and I love what I'm doing. I love the fitness. I love all the physical stuff and the mental stuff. And the way he spoke was just phenomenal for a lad that, you know, at 11, like literally had no coordination or no confidence, you know, no friends. Now he's just like one of the boys in the club.
When do you plan to bring Counterpunch to Ireland and how might it work here?
Look, I'm open to ideas on that. Personally, I think that the best way it'll work is if we have both parents, adolescents and potential facilitators in the room for the information session and literally just go from there. Because, like, I know this program works. It's been going now for 10 years here. It's been refined. It's got a complete curriculum, lesson plan, online portal with all the videos and everything. It's like just done for you, basically. So my objective in Ireland is just to hold some information sessions and to get as many parents as possible that would just, no matter whether they sign up their children for the program or their teenager, they're going to get some useful information, some of the tools that I'll share. The teenagers as well. And also people that are maybe people that work with youth, that coach, that, you know, I've met so many boxing coaches that work as well as coach. And I know many that would love to coach full time if they could afford it. I really believe that this is an opportunity where you can do that. So in terms of the facilitators, I'm looking at people that are doing what they love, but would like to maybe think about it as an entrepreneurial opportunity as well to create income for themselves. I mean, it's a paid for program, but it's a very realistic in terms of the cost over a 6-month period. You're looking at 24 sessions. And ultimately, you're not paying per hour, you're paying for the outcome. And I can guarantee you as parents, the outcome is invaluable. But literally, all I'd like to do is just get the information to as many people as possible that might have any interest in seeing young people thrive, literally, yeah.
So how can people contact you, Mercedes, if they'd like to learn more?
Well, obviously through the website, there's an email address, there's a phone number, there's everything on there. I would say the website is the first point of call. And then I'm open to any invitations to come and do presentations around the country. I'm going to be in Ireland. I land on the 28th of September and I leave for the UK on the 9th of October. I'm doing a presentation in Bolton and I'm then doing one in New York and I'm spending 5 days in Houston where I have a number of engagements there. So literally, literally just looking for the opportunity to give this information, put it out there, run it by people and see what they think. I mean, if it was feasible to run a training while I'm actually home, if people were interested enough, we could do an online introduction and then go from there as well and actually run a training while I'm home. But I'm happy to come back whenever if there's people that want to do the training afterwards. Literally, it's just to communicate the information about the program. That's my priority when I come back this time.
Mercedes Taff on her Counterpunch program, which she has developed over the past decade in Australia and is now planning to take overseas, including to Ireland. And if you'd like more information on Counterpunch, what it is and how you can get more info, visit the website counterpunch, all one word, .com.au. .au is the Australian domain name, counterpunch.com.au. And you can listen back to Mercedes' interview in full online on oceanfm.ie and by searching for Ocean FM Sport wherever you get your podcasts. And a reminder that this programme is available as a podcast each week on oceanfm.ie or wherever you get your podcasts. Simply search for Ocean FM Sport to find it. Chris O'Donnell runs in the 4x400 mixed relay tomorrow evening at 6:20 Irish time. We're back next week, same time, same place.